And now for our second speaker, we have Bruce Sea from Bangkok. Big hand for Bruce.
Hello, my name is Bruce, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Donna. That was excellent. And I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to speak. It's a great honor, and I look at this evening as very special for me. It puts two things that have been most prevalent in my adult life, one which is Thailand and Alcoholics Anonymous. So I've been living in Thailand since about 1999, and I got just picked up my 17-year chip a few days back on Sunday. And tomorrow I'll be 43 years old. So as I said, most of my adult life has been touched by AA and Thailand. I'm one of the lucky people that my sobriety now has surpassed my drinking career. My drinking career lasted about 14 years. And I really don't remember my first drink, and I'm not sure if I was an alcoholic before I picked up a drink, and I don't know if it filled any holes in me when I had my first drink, but I do know that I liked the way it felt. I thought it was fun, and I, ran with that. Like I said, I drank, starting relatively young. So by the age of 13, I had been caught by my parents drinking three times. And I remember being caught three times because the first time I got caught, I got punished for 1 month. The second time I got caught, I got punished for 2 months. The third time I got caught, I got punished for 3 months. And I wish I can tell you that, oh, I got caught because, we were all drinking in the room and my parents came home early and they saw us with beers in their hand, but that's not the case. I was caught because I was passed out on a bathroom floor with vomit all over me. Or, can't open the door. I normally walk on, but I can't open it because I'm falling down on the doorway. So I don't think I was, from the second I started to drink, it always been, kind of too much. Never enough, never cutting it off. And I think of this story when I think about my early drinking, which is I was walking in the cliffs behind my building. I grew up in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, overlooking the Midtown Manhattan. And they'd have these cliffs. And we, on the weekends, we'd go in the back of the cliffs to hang out and, do what we did. And it was a Saturday afternoon, and I had a joint in my hand and a beer in my hand. And I'm talking to my friend Chris, and we're talking about John, how John now is a drug addict. Because John is smoking weed before school. And we're doing this on a Saturday. And this is normal activity for a Saturday. Well, what happened would be about 3 or 4 weeks later, I was joining John smoking weed before school. As well as early on, I had a counselor at my school who wanted, was talking to me and asking me about, what I thought an alcoholic was and all this kind of stuff. And at the time, along with this, this story with, John and Chris, at the time I thought an alcoholic, it was a long, long list of things that people would do. One of those things would be maybe drinking out of a bottle directly, or drinking every day, or drinking hard liquor, or drinking before school. It was a long, long list. And as I began to do those things on that list, I would change this definition. I would take it off of that list and somehow justify it so I didn't fall into this definition. As I began to take those things off of the list, other things began to happen in my life. Things that I had interest in, like sports, family, hobbies, this, that, and the other thing, slowly I began to lose interest in those things. So I remember sports being one of them. I was really interested in sports. I would be doing everything about sports. Now, all of a sudden, not really, not wanting to do it. I also kind of remember having a decent relationship with my family. And all of a sudden, now I'm kind of changed, not giving everyone all the information. And a kind of an example of that would be, I lived in an apartment building, so we all grew up, all my friends grew up in the same building together. So I would tell my friends, as I started to drink, I would tell my friends, when you come to my house, you just walk by the kitchen and just say hi to my mom. Don't stop and have a conversation with my mom. And I would tell my mom, look, don't talk to my friends. You're embarrassing me. You know, please leave them alone. They're not, you're just coming to check, you know, come to visit me. Leave them alone. Because I was trying to keep the stories separate. And this is kind of a pattern that built up, you know, in the way I began to live my life. And what was the other thing? Yeah. Well, I never liked school before drinking or after drinking, but, you know, it definitely did affect, you know, what I was doing and how I was doing it. What else? Yeah. So, you know, the first time I tried to stop drinking was about 17 years old. And I didn't think about that incident or that time that I tried to stop drinking until I was sitting at a table at my sponsor's house and we were reading the big book. And it got to that paragraph or page where it starts talking about not having a defense against the first drink. And he said to me, do you have any stories that can kind of bring this home for you? And I was rattling my head and I remember this story at the age of 17, how I tried to stop drinking. And I was in a bar at 17. I snuck into a bar with my friends and it was real crowded and they asked me, would you like a drink? And I'm like, no, I'm good. And it came around 20 minutes later. Would you like a drink? No, I'm good. And three or four times later, somehow I ended up with a drink in my hand. Never ever to think about this time that I tried to stop. Didn't think about it at all, like it never existed. And that's kind of the pattern that began, you know, in my life as I began to try to stop drinking. You know, I recently read in a magazine, you know, things that you're supposed to do before you're 40 or 50. And on this list, it said something like, you're supposed to have 2 blackouts. And I was like, what? I'm like, that's a weekend, you know? And, you know, I was a blackout drinker. And not knowing where I parked my car or, you know, having scratches or having, you know, parking tickets. So all this kind of stuff was very common, you know, close calls with the law, dealing with family issues, all these kind of problems. And as these things began, you know, consequences, of course, as these things began to go and I started to get a little bit older, I started to try to stop drinking more often. And I would put these lines. I was big on lines. I'm going to stop on this day. And that's what began about at the age of 20. I started to make these lines quite often. They'd be for birthdays, for New Year's, paydays, first of the month. And each time I would set that date up on the 21st birthday, I'm not going to drink. And then that 21st birthday would come and it would fall on a Saturday. And I would say, I can't stop drinking on a Saturday. And I'd pass that line and I would never really give it says something in the book about the fine art of justification. I never really wanted to look too deep into it because if I had to take a closer look, it would be clear to me that I had a problem with alcohol. And I wasn't ready to admit this. So I passed these dates over and over again and think like they never really counted. That's what took place for me. And, what happened basically was, you know, I lost hope. And that's really what happened. I lost hope. All my life, you know, my parents, teachers, friends of my parents would say things to me, you know, Bruce, you're a sharp guy. You're going to make it. You're going to be successful. And for a long time, I would be constantly looking in the future like, they're right. I'm going to make it. I'm going to have it. I'm going to be rich. I'm going to have a success. All these things. And for the first time, I looked around and said, I'm not sure. I'm not buying it. I looked around where I was living, the circumstances I had, the consequences that I was dealing with, and it wasn't looking too hopeful. So my last drink wasn't really anything dramatic. It was normal kind of thing. I had a friend of mine who was on holiday from New York. I was living in San Francisco. We had, you know, I think 10 days holiday and was drinking for 10 days. And kind of jokingly, when he was getting ready to go, I said, you know, when you leave, I'm going to take a break. And, you know, my kidneys were hurting. I had pain, and I think, you know, maybe I should really take a break when you go. And he left, and I woke up in the morning, and I was, you know, kind of hungover, and I tried to go under my couch where I had a cigar box that had weed in it, and I was looking to, you know, take the edge off of a hangover, and my weed was gone. And I thought, oh, my friend, because he flew back to New York, he took it with him, and or he borrowed it, however you want to put it. And I said to myself, you know what? Maybe I should take this time and give it a little bit of time and try to stop this time. There was no setting a date forward, no doing anything. Let me try to let me not make this phone call and let's see what happens. And I went 7 days without drinking, and it was a long time. And I was at work, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to keep it up. I knew that this way of just not drinking or not doing anything wasn't going to hold up. And I was really bored at work. It was a Sunday, and I looked up picked up the yellow pages or white pages, whatever it was, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called them, and they asked me some basic questions. They said, where do you live? And I told them where I lived or the area I lived, and they said, there's a meeting here, 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 here. And I said, okay, I got it. And there was a meeting that night at 10 p.m. on a Sunday night at the dry dock in San Francisco. And, I waited to the last, I looked on the outside and I said, you know, I'm going to go in. I didn't know anything. I knew AA was AA, but I didn't really know what took place in meetings. I didn't know anything about tradition, steps or books or anything like that. And I said, I'll walk in and I'll check it out. And if I don't like it, I'll leave. And if someone, you know, tries to stop me from leaving, there'll be a pushing fight. You know, there'll be some kind of issue because I'm not signing up for anything. I didn't know really what to expect. And I walked into my first meeting, and they had it wasn't a big meeting like this. It was, you know, it's meeting in a small room, and they had a table, and they had two guys in front, and I thought the guy that opened the meeting was, you know, a hired person, and I thought the speaker was some kind of professional. And that's all I knew. And I got there at the, you know, right at, you know, 9:59 before the meeting, and I never raised my hand as a newcomer. And I sat down and I listened to a guy tell his story. And the guy that told the story was really old. And he in his story, he talked about being kicked out of his family. They had a restraining order against his two daughters. They wouldn't let him see his grandchildren, and he was arrested 7 times from drunk driving. He was homeless. He was living under a highway pass. But the guy was, you know, 60 something, 70 years old. And I'm, you know, at the time, 25. And, I listened to his story, and I was just all of a sudden, for some particular reason, I thought, you know, the only difference between me and this guy is this guy's 40 years older or 50 years older. And, you know, it's just time. This stuff hasn't happened to me yet. And that was a real important thing that I walked out of that first meeting with. So I did walk out of that meeting, and I remember walking home. I lived real close to the meeting, and I said to myself, you know, I will go back next week, and I'll keep going back until I get my act together. And when I get my act together and I get these things which I thought were important, you know, was out of debt, get the heat off of me, maybe have my own business or whatever I was dreaming about the future. And once I get that going, maybe I can learn something. I'll be able to drink again. And that was the plan. So I waited a whole week to go back to the same meeting, really not realizing that there was 600 other meetings that week in San Francisco. So I went back the second meeting, 10 p.m. Sunday night at the dry dock. And I don't remember who the speaker was, but I sat. I never raised my hand as someone new. And I really don't know what happened during the meeting. But as I was leaving the meeting, you know, they had chairs there and chairs here. They kind of went and we were trying to exit. And all of a sudden, I'm face to face with this guy. And he points at me and he says, are you new? And I said, I guess I was here last week. And he said, okay, well, do you have a book? And I said, no, I don't got a book. And he said, well, I'm going to buy you a book. And I'm like, well, I got money. I can buy a book. If I need a book, I'll buy the book. And he said, no. I got to buy this book for you. And I was like, I got money. I can buy a book. And then he began to make kind of a big deal about it. And I kind of looked at him and said, all right, man, don't argue too much. And then he said to me, look, I'll buy this book for you, but you just make a deal with me. One day you buy someone else a book and you can pass, you got money, save it for this next guy. So I said, okay, fair enough. Then he said to me, do you have a schedule? And I said, nope, I don't got a schedule. So he asked the guy behind the counter, can I get a schedule? And they gave him a schedule and he opened the schedule and he circled. He goes, I go here on Monday. I go here on Tuesday. I go here on Wednesday. And he circled a meeting each day of the week. I said, okay, all right, you go to a lot of meetings, I see. And then he said to me, let me give you my phone number. And he wrote his phone number right on top of the schedule. And now I look at him thinking, man, this dude is gay. Now I see what's going on. You know, because, you know, again, coming in from, you know, there's always an angle. That's how I'm looking at things. There's always an angle. And, you know, if someone's doing something nice for me, they must want something in return. And, you know, that's the kind of mentality that I had. But it turns out this fella was being nothing but genuine, you know, and this guy was a good guy. And, so what began to happen with this guy would be is, you know, we would go to this meeting in the marina over there, and he would, and I lived on, if you know Sam, I lived two blocks up the hill. I lived two blocks up the hill, and he would say to me, let me give you a ride. And I'm like, your car is three blocks that way. I'm two blocks this way. Why would we go to your car? And he said, no, you got to come to my car. And he would give me a ride, and he'd pull in front of my driveway, and we'd end up sitting there, you know, for 30, 40 minutes. And, you know, what was happening was this guy was spoon-feeding me Alcoholics Anonymous. He saw that I was being a bit defiant. He saw that I kept on telling him I do like the meetings, and I do find, you know, the shares funny, and I do find, you know, the speakers entertaining, but I'm not sure if I'm ready to do this step things yet. And so he was, you know, he was getting me to do this step one in a roundabout way. You know, he was getting me to start talking about things that, you know, I kind of was never really telling anyone the full story of, you know, a night out, you know. And I began to tell him more about the truth of these kind of things. And, you know, there's nothing like it. What he was doing is it was one alcoholic, you know, working with another alcoholic. And he got me to at least get attracted enough to the program that I would give this thing a try. And he had these kind of, you know, the steps. So I started doing the steps with him, and I got to step one, and he would constantly try to tell me, well, why don't you come up? I want you to really come up with an image for step one. I really want you to think of a great story that really reminds you that you're powerless over alcohol. So I had one. And that had one was I would get off of work at 7 o'clock, and I'd call home to my girlfriend at 6:45 and tell her, I'm leaving work, I'm closing the shop, I'm on my way home. Really believing that this was going to happen. And I'd close the shop, and I'd walk down Market Street, and I'd get to the corner, and my car was parked a full block that way, and the bar that I normally drank at was a half a block this way. And I'd get to that corner, and I would look at the bar, and I would say, I wonder who's there. And I'd walk up to that bar, and I'd look outside and through the window, and I would be looking around, and I'm like, man, it's crowded. I can't see who's in there. I better go inside. And sure enough, I'd walk inside, and I'd walk all the way to the back of the bar, and no one would be there that I knew. And I would say, I better wait for them. I'll have a drink. And that's the funny part of the story. Yeah. The not so funny part was I wouldn't come home. And it happened more than one time. And, you know, if anyone's been in that boat, you know, those eyes when you do get home are not too good. And, so that was my story for this guy. And, you know, when I got to step two, I looked at this guy, and this guy was a little kooky. He was, but, I would look at him and I would say, you know, I believe you believe, but I'm not sure if I'm ready to believe. I mean, I really want to. I want, but I'm just not sure if I'm one of those kind of people that can do this thing. You know, I was still thinking AA was a bit hokey pokey. Think it was a little bit flower children kind of mentality. At least it was in San Fran, at the dry dock in San Francisco. And, you know, so anyway, I said I was going to do, the steps with him. And one of those evenings when I was, you know, in his car right in front of my driveway, he said, okay, we're going to start step 2 and 3 right now. And he said to me, do you believe, you know, there's a power greater than yourself? And I said, yes. And he said to you, are you willing to turn your will and your life over to the care of God? And I said, yes. Like I told you, I'm a clever guy. That I looked in his eyes and I knew if I said yes, I was going to be able to leave that car right away. And I was looking at my clock and it was like, you know, 10 to 11 thinking Sports Center is about to start. And, you know, I want to go watch that and I'm going to just say okay. And I left that car and, you know, the moral of that story is that guy, he was fine. He was okay. But then I went 2 or 3 months of really struggling and almost drinking, thinking to myself quite often that what am I doing? Is it worth it? You know, I was looking around and I had the same car, the same job. I drove the same way to work and everything seemed to be the same, except I wasn't drinking and I wasn't having much fun. And that was a hard part of me coming to AA was, you know, for a long time, this fun and drinking seemed to be this kind of, you know, cement. They went hand in hand. You know, a rock concert couldn't just be a rock concert. It had to be, you know, you had to be, you know, completely drunk or plastered, you know, in order to have fun at the show. You know, a day of skiing just couldn't be a day of skiing unless I was really drunk. A ball game couldn't be a ball game. A car ride couldn't be a car ride unless I was, you know, having fun with music loud and smoking and drinking. So I did struggle with this in the beginning about, you know, thinking I wasn't going to have fun. So I was at a big book study. My home group had two meetings, Friday and a Wednesday. They had a big book study. And at this big book study, they were reading that chapter, We Agnostics. And all of a sudden, it realized that I didn't do I heard something at the meeting, and I realized that I skipped out on this step. And I called my sponsor after that meeting and told him that I think I need to do step 2 and 3 over again. And I did that. And, you know, at the time, I was going to turn my will over to, you know, the AA way. And, at that point, with, I'm not sure, 3, 4, 5 months, whatever I had under my belt, you know, I kind of knew what the AA way was because it was a broken record. I would go to the meetings over and over again, and they kept on talking about the same things. Do the steps, have a sponsor, be of service. But it was like over, you know, if you weren't hearing, you weren't listening. And, so I made that effort and I made a change. So whenever I go to, you know, I joined a home group and I kept on going to this particular meeting, the first meeting, and I would go there each week. I would go to the same meetings each week, and that way when I would know everyone in the meeting. And if someone showed up at that meeting who I never saw before, I had to get up and go shake their hand. It was this total thing of just willingness just to do whatever it was to fit in. You know, I've later heard, you know, that, you know, if you want to feel like a member, do what members do. You know, we all are a member once we raise our hand to say that we're an alcoholic, but it doesn't do much good if you're not feeling like it. And so what happened was I got real lucky. I ended up finding a great home group, and I found it by mistake. I was going to, you know, the good-looking crowd meeting on Friday in San Francisco. It was called Union and Steiner, meeting that's been there for years. And they had all the good people, the good-looking people were there. And I ran into a guy that was inviting me to a poker game. And he said to me, that's what I was looking for. I was looking for something to show me that I can find something to have fun. And they said to me, okay, well, the main group, they don't come to this group. They go to this other group. And I'm like, well, can't we just meet at the game? You know, but finally I ended up going to the group and was blown away by what I had seen there. You know, it was a lot of young people on fire about Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I ended up going to that meeting, you know, as long as I was in San Francisco, every Friday and Wednesday, you know, for a year and a half. So it was a commitment to that group, and I didn't miss that group. I think I missed it maybe two times for New Year's Eve, because we all went to Las Vegas during New Year's Eve, all 20 sober people just going, doing crazy, sober, fun things, you know, and I needed to see that. And another thing that happened at that group was a lot of these people were involved in service. And they were, you know, kind of telling me to get involved in service. And I wasn't sure what I had to offer. But, you know, I wasn't ready right yet, let's say. But there was a roundup coming up. There was a roundup. So I'll talk a little about the roundup, because it is something that did change, you know, I think, my sobriety. There was a roundup. We talked about this, I think, yesterday at the meeting. Was San Diego was going on. San Diego was having the World Conference. And so I got sober in February. This was, I guess, in June 10th, right? Is that what happens? July? Yeah, July, something like that. And everyone was going to San Diego to the roundup. Everyone was talking about it. It was like all the news. And I'm like, well, I don't see the importance of going. I mean, I just didn't get it. I had, you know, a few months of sober. I didn't know what this thing was. And I really wasn't sure if I was going to be sticking around to this program yet. And, but everyone came back from San Diego and they were on fire. They were just talking about how great it was. It was unbelievable. 80,000 people with the Serenity Prayer and all these kind of things. And, so I got kind of intrigued. And at the same time, a lot of the people in my home group, were very active in a conference called IKIPA. So, the IKIPA was going to be in Hawaii, and I had never been to Hawaii. And I said, well, okay. It was in September or something. I said, okay, I'll go. And I remember, you know, going to the conference, really not sure what was going on. You know, I wasn't really joining. I had a few people that I liked, but I wasn't sure yet. And I got to the conference, and it was mind-boggling. If you've ever been to an IKIPA, you may know what I'm talking about. When you say your name, like now, like I come up here and I say, Bruce, I'm an alcoholic, you just say Bruce. Well, there, that's not what happens. They got a full song. They go, you know, we love you, Bruce. Keep coming back. Lots and lots of hugs. Like a whole song thing that goes on. It's pretty weird. And they also have, like a yarn ball that they give you as a necklace. And, you walk up to someone that you've never met before and you stick your hand out to shake your hand. And they're like, oh no, we don't do handshakes. We only do hugs. And they'd give you a hug. And then after they hug you, they'd take a piece of the yarn out of your ball and tie it on to your necklace. So if you've met now 300 new people, you would have a full necklace that you've hugged 300 people at the conference. And it was crazy. And but the other thing that took place was on the day trip that we went somewhere in Hawaii. We went so far away, and we went to some waterfall, and we were with, young guys and young girls, and we were all on this path, and there was, you know, waterfall and water, and all of a sudden these girls take their top off and jump into the water. And I'm like, man, what is going on? Look at these people. And I'm like, well, maybe this AA thing is not so bad after all. You know, again, I was interested in the fun aspect. I was a young fella. And you know, I think the roundups have a lot of purpose, but I think one of the key purposes of these roundups are that we come here and we feed off of all the energy and all the, you know, people are just in the solution, and we feed all of this, and then we go back to our groups and we pass it off to other people. You know, we get excited, we get caught on fire about Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got back, it did spark something in me when I got back to my home group. And I did begin to do some of the service work. And I got involved in things that maybe I wouldn't have gotten involved in. One thing was, it was that I sat on a bid committee for ACUPA, which is the All California Young People's thing. And we bid, and we did a whole show to win the bid, and then we won the bid, and I sat on a host committee. And, you know, they elected me the facilitator chair. You know, I got less, maybe about a year of sobriety, and I'm negotiating, like, you know, how much I should pay for coffee and how much, you know, with a hotel. And I didn't know this was what I signed up for, but I did it. And it was a real powerful thing for me to sit on that committee. And another thing that happened that roundup, as what will happen tomorrow, will be they'll have the sobriety countdown. And I was about 7 months sober, and it seemed that everyone at that roundup had been sober forever. You know, it did. They did have a lot of people with a lot of time, just like they have here tonight. I know there's a lot of people with a lot of time. But I had 7 months, and I wasn't too keen on standing up last in this thing. So as, you know, everyone at my table began to sat thinking, man, I'm going to be the last one standing in this room. I won't stand. I won't do it. But sure enough, I stood up, and it was only 7 months. And they, as they began to do the countdown, it was every level. And they went down, you know, they got down to the last days. 1 day, 2 days. And they said, is anyone drunk here right now? Is anybody drank today? And some guy in the very far corner screams out, I drank. And they dragged him on stage. And they gave him the book, you know, like someone's going to do tomorrow. The old timer is going to give the new timer this book. And this old, you know, this dignified old timer and this guy is, you know, drunk at the meeting with 2,000 people. So yeah, I went home and I got involved in the roundup, and I also got involved in various other kinds of service commitments that I still remember today. You know, one was that was H&I. So I went to, I did a meeting at the San Francisco County Jail at 850 Bryant, the third Thursday of the month for about a couple of years. And, it was powerful. It was a powerful meeting here, you know, seeing the chains and the doors open. And hearing people's story in there. And I had done various kinds of service work throughout my sobriety. And each time I've been, you know, greatly rewarded. What else? Am I covering everything here? In the 12 and 12, in the first step, it talks about the young alcoholic. And how the bottom of the people that are a little bit older needs to be to rise up and hit these young people from behind in order to have them save their life or to save 10 to 15 years of suffering and misery. And I love arguing and I love debating. And if you came to me and told me if I continue to drink that I would be dead today, I might be able to take on that argument and argue with you. A good argument would be, well, we see people coming in all the time who are 50 years for the first time ending up in AA. 50 years, 60 years, people come in all the time. I don't know if I can lose that argument that if I continue to drink, I'd be dead right now. But the one argument that I know I could not win would be being spared 10 or 15 years of misery and pain. And that's where I am in my sobriety right now. I have 17 years, like I say. These 17 years have been great. I've been, you know, saved of this continued path of where I was from the age of, you know, 20 to 21 to 22, this constant battle. So that's where I look at myself today. I look like I'm really one of the lucky ones. So what it's like today is I have a real full life. You know, I got my work life. I got my personal life. I got AA life, and I try to balance it all. And it's sometimes hard with Bangkok traffic. And that's not a joke. So, about 6 months ago, I, you know, just like I've done before, like I went to my first meeting and I also moved in sobriety. I moved to Santa Rosa when I quit my job, the job that I was begging to keep with 30 days sober. I was begging to keep because all the commission slips were coming in, you know, 6 weeks after. So now they're right here and I'm sitting in front of my boss and I'm trying to convince him why I need this one last chance to keep my job. That he agreed and let me keep that job. And then a year and a half later, I told him, if you want me, I'll work for you on the weekends and I'll work for you on these 3 months. Take it or leave it. And he took it. And I ended up going back to school in Santa Rosa and I moved to Santa Rosa away from my home group. And I went to this group called Mature and Sober. And they were not joking, man. If you've been to that meeting, that's not a joke. It's a bunch of old people in Santa Rosa and they were sober for a long time. and I was not new, but I didn't belong to that group. And I was going to be living over there, and I was going to have to make an effort to join that group. And so the first chance they said, well, the guy who was setting up, the guy that was making the coffee had started to drink. So they had a coffee commitment. And I said, okay, I'll do it. I didn't even drink coffee. Didn't know how to make coffee. The guy told me, he said, you see that whatever it says, just double the amount for the coffee. Everyone will be fine. So that's what I did. And I made coffee for that meeting, and I got there early. And then the guy who set up the chairs drank. And you know, there was no new people at the meeting, and then I ended up, you know, setting up the chairs and making the coffee. So for the, I maybe it was a 7 o'clock meeting, 7:30 meeting, but whatever it was, I was there 2 hours early, you know, buying cookies, making coffee, setting up chairs, and I got to know that group really, really well in a short period of time. And so whenever I make this effort to join a group and to be a part of it, I've always reaped the reward. So about 6 months ago, I declared myself to have a new home group. And I said, I'm going to go to this meeting, and I'm going to be active, and I'm going to do my best to join this group. So I've joined the group called the Nana 830 group. It takes place at the Ambassador Hotel every night at 8:30. And sure enough, they suckered me into being the treasurer within a few weeks. And what's happened at this meeting by me going there, I've got a chance that I've been in Bangkok for a long period of time. But I just only know a lot of people at a very, you know, not a deep level, you know, and in the past 6 months, I've had a chance to get to know people a lot more. And it's really been something special for my life. And I go there, they have a lot of people who have a lot of time. And I listen to people like Tom and Danny, who've got, you know, 30 years of sobriety. They show up quite often, and they say the things that I need to hear, things that I was missing. As well as, there's a treatment center that drops off a bunch of new people twice a week. And I've got a chance to see these people come, and they're excited. And it's been a real treat. And I've seen people, not only in the treatment center, come to the meeting, raise their hand, and I got them, you know, brand new, first meeting. And I've got to see people grow in front of me, people that are here tonight. Louis, Michelle, Robbie. I mean, these are people it's a joy watching them get this program. You know, when I came to AA and I sat, you know, like that first meeting and I heard this guy talk, you know, and he told his share, I kind of just had to believe what he was telling me was the truth. And he got up on the chair here and he said, yeah, you know, I was like this, I did that, now I'm like this. Okay, I believe you. You know, I got to show some faith that what he's telling me is true. But I've been coming around now long enough where I see people where they raise their hand new. And then I watch them what they look like in 30 days later. And to me, this is proof that this program works. I don't have to have so much faith anymore. So I don't know where else I should go with this. I think that's probably about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. Okay, there's a few announcements to be made. Registration is opening again in the morning at approximately 8:30. If anybody wants to give service and take up a commitment tomorrow, just come and see us at the registration. We need people for registration, literature, the T-shirts, and maybe marathon meetings. So just come up and see any of us and tell us what you'd like to do. The Saturday night dinner starts at 6 p.m. before the keynote speaker. Get your tickets in advance for yourself and any guests that you may have. Just to let you know, soft drinks are available at the buffet, but coffee is not, so we'll keep the coffee going here if you want to come out and have a cup afterwards. Speaker CDs will be sold outside the ballroom here on Sunday morning. There will be two sheets, one for addresses in the US, Canada, and one for everywhere else. The price is 300 baht, which includes postage for your address anywhere in the world. CD will include MP3 files of the speakers from tonight, Friday, Saturday night, and Sunday morning. Now, the first activities tomorrow are a women's meeting in the Orchid Room, a men's meeting in the Catalia Room, an Al-Anon meeting in the Lotus Room, and Thai workshops in the Vanda Room, which is back here. Now, there's also a Scandinavian meeting just back at the back of the pool at 11 o'clock tomorrow, and there's a German meeting at 11 o'clock too in the Vanda Room. 2 o'clock, sorry, got that wrong. The German meeting's at 2 o'clock. Okay. Now, there's marathon meetings tonight, starting in about 10 minutes in the Vanda Room here, every hour for the next 3 hours. And would anybody like to volunteer to chair that first meeting? Anybody here? Chair? Lady here will... Right. Anybody want to chair the second meeting? There's a man there, right? And what about the last one or the third one? The buffet tomorrow, that third meeting, thank you. The buffet tomorrow, you have to have a ticket for it. So make sure you get your ticket before 6 o'clock. Or there will be a registration desk outside the buffet as well. You'll be able to get one there. Okay, a last word on anonymity. Please remember that this is an anonymous program. Who you see here, what you see here, when you leave here, please let it say here. And remember that this... The only people that have declared themselves alcoholics are the people who have actually said it. This is an open meeting. There may not be alcoholics here. Also remember the 12th tradition, which states that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And let's close this evening by saying the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.